It's that time again. ESO just dropped their 2024 EMS Index, a must-read benchmarking tool for every EMS agency. With insights from over 12 million EMS responses in 2023, it covers topics like bystander CPR, ambulance offload times, and opioid overdoses. Your free copy is now available at ESO.com/EMS-POD.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to episode number 8 of the Not AFib podcast, powered by the Journal of Emergency Medical Services. My name is Mark Flotter. What is networking? Who should partake and why? What is the purpose and how do you define success around it? Networking is more than just meeting people. It is a tool, one of many, to be utilized during every stage of a professional career. It's a skill, just like so many others, to be studied, practiced, and improved upon. It's bigger than a job search, a career transition, or a conference social skill. You've undoubtedly heard the phrase, it's not what you know, but who you know, when people talk about career advancement opportunities. EMS and public safety are notorious for promoting from within, but being in is just the beginning. Who you know might get you in the door, but what you know and how you handle yourself while you're in the literal or proverbial room will either keep you there or get you kicked out fast. Networking is much bigger than just meeting people. It's the beginning of a new career opportunity. It's meaningful connection and camaraderie. It's power and its purpose. Networking changes lives, sometimes even saves them. And those are excerpts of an article from the EMS Professionals official publication of the Wisconsin EMS Association's winter 2021 edition. And that article is written by Brett Lyle, who is joining us today. Brett is from and lives in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. She is communication major, English minor from Texas A&M University in College Station, Texas. She started in the EMS field in 2010 and has worked public, private, ground, and air. Brett began her coaching career in 2014 with a health and wellness focus while concurrently serving the EMS industry in business development, strategic, and public relations roles. She launched Brett Lyle Coaching and established personal and professional development programs in 2018, working part-time while she worked for others. She made her full-time transition in the summer of 2021. Brett teaches the four pillars of long-term career success: branding, goal setting, networking, communications. She offers emergent leadership program, new program approved by NEMSMA, the National EMS Management Association, for 25 hours for supervisor, manager, executive leadership credentials. She also offers agency counseling, consulting, one-on-one coaching, C3 annual membership program, webinars, and speaking engagements. She has done career coaching at multiple conferences, has led virtual events, and hosted industry-renowned leaders on her own podcast called Emergent Leadership. It's my pleasure to welcome Brett Lyle to the podcast. Brett, thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I am doing well. Thank you. Let's go ahead and get started with what got you into EMS.
Sure. Short answer, an economic crash in 2008. But the backstory there, I, like so many others, come from a family who has been in the industry and maybe different than a lot of others. Out the gate, I'll make a lot of friends here. I was pretty determined not to land in EMS. I was raised by a single mom with three kids and barely, you know, able to make ends meet, didn't have financial help from my father. And I saw how difficult it was and was pretty determined not to follow that path and land in the industry. But I graduated from Texas A&M, as you mentioned in the intro, and thank you for that, in 2009. And so about a year before I graduated, I have always believed in network, and Texas A&M is known for the Aggie network, pretty well renowned. And I reached out to 20 different people in the industry who had graduated with my degree in my college, who were in sales and were in healthcare, because I knew I wanted to be in healthcare. And I got responses from most of them. sadly, most of them said, if I have a job next month, I'm happy to help. So it was one of those things where I was really just like, I gotta make a plan. I put myself through college. Student loans are due soon. Those are fun. So what am I gonna do? And my mom, of course, always in my corner, sent me a job description for an account executive role with AMR and sent it to me and said, this is right up your alley. You might just apply. And I read it and went, I hate it when she's right. But moms are always right. Mama knows best. And so I put in for the job and applied in 7 different states and was ready to just go where you know the industry needed me and figure it out from there. And that's where I started, and that's the path. And then the industry is just so grateful, so many people with so much heart and a ton of opportunity, and was able to grow pretty quickly and make a pretty solid impact and kind of stuck with it. So that's kind of what led me into it, and really haven't left yet.
So then your EMS background is from the management administrative side. What are some of the nuances that you encountered as you progressed after you got your job with AMR in 2010? What are some of the nuances, or what are some of the things you found that were unique to working that aspect of EMS?
Oh man, I think there's so many nuances, or just specifically when we think about one market versus another. There's this really, I think, overused phrase, but it's all in the delivery. I appreciate the play on words. People say, when you've seen one EMS market, you've seen one EMS market. And it's true. However, in every EMS market, there's one common denominator, and it's people. And so one of the things that I learned really quickly was that this is a people business. And whether you're in the clinical side, which I chose not to delve into, or you stay in the administrative and focus on the leadership, whether you're in public or private or ground or air, or you're in the telemedicine, telehealth space, fire, public, it doesn't matter. The point is, and the thing that's common amongst all those groups is who we're serving. And we're serving one another. We're serving external and internal teams. We're serving other agencies through mutual aid agreements and different regional support initiatives, and ultimately the patient. And so whether you're in the administrative side and you're in the business office and making sure that invoices get paid and, HMOs, all of your insurance companies you have good relationships with, or whether it's because people need to understand, how the breakdown of an invoice works, even the administrative people are all still focused on those same goals, which is, the care of the people that we take care of as an industry.
So you worked in EMS, like we said, starting in 2010. In 2014, you started your coaching career. Yes, what sir. Led you into that field? What prompted that decision?
Yeah. So you'll get a kick out of this. I teach branding, and one of the 4 pillars that you mentioned that I teach is branding. And this is all, everything I teach is original. Everything I teach is, I wrote it. I'm obviously very familiar with the John Maxwell and the Simon Sinek and the Jocko, kind of style, all the different styles of leadership. And I actually started through a master's program in leadership and management. And there's a ton of philosophies, but everything I teach is mine and comes from my personal lessons learned and really sharing my knowledge and then that of my clients. I've now worked with, over 160 people one-on-one, not including all the larger webinars and things. It really all started because I needed balance. I think like so many others in this industry, I have a tendency to be a workaholic. And so when you love what you do, you pour into it. And I love that as a coach. I'm like, that's the space I want people in. But then there's the other little, mouse on my shoulder saying, but burnout is real. Workaholic is a bad word. There's a lot to, we don't want to be able, we don't want to pour so hard into everyone else that we forget to pour into ourselves. And so coaching for me started in the health and wellness space with I was working with a multi-level marketing company, doing health and wellness programs, essentially leading teams that participated in and sold workout programs and supplements. And it was build a team. So if you know anything about multi-level marketing companies or MLMs, you know, it's, hey, I'm going to build this team and then I make commission off of my team. You know, there's the four letter word or the dirty word is it's a pyramid scheme. But essentially, the only way to be successful in those spaces is by building your network and building those teams. And so it was a nice way that originally started from truly my, actually, funny story. My first boss, when I was 15 years old, I started working at a little gym. It was a family owned, all women's gym that was joggable to my high school. So I could make it to cross country practice. I went before school and after school for 4 hours. And that was my first job. And my first boss, Aubrey Warren, still a dear friend of mine and a great mentor, she called me and I had just moved back to the area and said, I need a favor. I need another coach. And it was all about a commission for her. She needed to hit a key performance. She needed to hit a certain number and make a certain things to lead this. And so she asked me to get into this program with her as a favor. And I said, well, what is it? And of course, I'm going to say yes to Aubrey as long as I can. And it doesn't put me out because she's someone that's been very supportive of me up to this point. So I joined her team and jumped into the, you know, multi-level marketing, health and wellness, workout programs, building teams, providing support to other people. But truly, in the beginning, it was about me finding balance because you, as I think most people know, maybe aren't so good at practicing, our wellness is not just physical, but mental and emotional. So that's why I got into it. And then I just realized, man, I love this, you know, building of teams and sharing of stories and really using my experiences and my skill sets to support other people on their journeys. And so it started as health and wellness. My first brand was called Shine Together and obviously has evolved now to be Brett Lyle Coaching, but the principle has always stayed mm-hmm. the same. It's all about be better for yourself and you're better for the world around you.
Excellent point, Brett. You hit on a couple real important points, not only the balance, health and wellness. You mentioned overall wellness as far as physical, emotional, spiritual. Those are a lot of key buzzwords, key phrases that we talk about in the EMS with clinicians as far as avoiding mental health crises. You touched on branding, you touched on networking. We'll talk about networking here in just a few minutes, expand a little bit more on the excerpts that we read. But one of the other key issues that's been addressed or identified in the past several years with the EMS trend surveys has been leadership. And what is your experience in working with folks that are in leadership positions? Do you find that they're doing everything necessary for their organizations, for their people? Or when they come to you, do you introduce them to something that's completely eye-opening and something they had no idea they could even be doing as a leader?
Yes. I think it depends on the person, of course. I'd hate to generalize and say people are doing this or not doing this. I think, you know, we as an industry have a really terrible habit of overgeneralizing and oversimplifying very complex concepts. And I understand why, but, you know, I think the short answer to your question is yes. I think there are people in this industry that get it. And there are people in this industry that don't get it. And we kind of need them both. I have to share with you some of the biggest leadership lessons that I've learned, and I've heard so many of my clients say the same thing, are not from great leaders. They're from terrible leaders. They're from people that I never want to be, right? I've had bad bosses, and they say, you don't leave a job, you leave a bad boss. And that's been true for me before. And it's been true for most of my clients, I would say, that, you know, it really comes down to not just what you do, but who are you surrounded by and the environment that you're in. And so, of course, there are people who are very mindful of that, and cognizant of the weight of their words. And there are people that aren't. And it's really easy to create a toxic environment when you're not mindful. And it's really, really hard to create a strong culture that's positive and transparent and open and safe, ultimately, is what people need. I think, you know, there's this concept of culture, and people use culture in one way and one way only. They think, well, we need to increase morale and better the culture. Well, sure, but culture is just how people feel. So a culture is what they connect to and what works for them. So there's a lot of places, Mark, that have really great leaders, but they don't have a strong culture and of a certain thing, right? They have a good leader at the top that maybe that leader is not so great at sharing their vision, and they need some communication support. How do they get people behind that message? How do they share? And they're phenomenal, but they don't have the skill sets to be able to get the followership, which is clearly an expectation of being a leader, is that in order to lead, you have to have followers. And so I think that's something that is underappreciated a lot of times in this industry. There's so many strong personality types and a lot of type A's, and you know, our industry, whether it's public safety or EMS or hospital or emergency medicine and at the physician level, we're protocol people, right? And it's very black and white. And so leadership is gray area, and there is no perfect leader, and there is no absolutely, well, there is, I would say by definition of using the word leader, there is no bad leader. I think there are plenty of people that are managers or that are not good leaders, but there's also people that are great leaders with bad intentions. And so I think that's something that people often overlook, is that not everybody is a leader, and that's okay, because we too need followers and we too need people to bounce things off. And I think the other piece is that there is no one way that a leader looks or acts or decisions that get made. It's really going to depend on their people and their culture and that environment that they're in. I know that's, did that answer your question?
Oh, of course, of course. And that leads me into my next question as far as coaching. I would imagine that leaders who are deficient in some of the skills that you mentioned, that's where coaching would benefit them, to help enhance and develop those skills to help them build that culture that you were just describing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I posted on LinkedIn the other day. I'm a big proponent of LinkedIn for a lot of reasons, but because it's one of the very few spaces where you can capitalize on the skill sets related to all four of those pillars. So your brand shows up in your activity and your profile picture and your headline and your about section, right? Those things share who you are, what you're all about, not just your job. It's bigger than your job. You're bigger than your job. LinkedIn also is great for building connection and building your network and growing your connections and in quality connections and building quality relationships, which is really where I focus. It's not quantity, it's quality. And it gives you a platform to effectively communicate, to draw those people in. And all of that relates to how do you push forward with your goal. And your goal may be personally for you as a leader, or it may be for your organization, to grow your organization or to adjust a culture or lean into a piece of your culture that you haven't put a lot of focus on. So it's a really powerful tool. But the other day I posted on LinkedIn, any guesses on what the most underrated skill of leadership was? And I got a lot of great guesses. I think you contributed to a few of them. A few people contributed to it, but a lot of great things were said. You know, humility came up, being a communicator, being able to listen, empathy, all great characteristics. But if you ask me, spoiler alert, because I haven't posted this out yet, but the thing that gets overlooked the most is coachability at a leadership level. A lot of people get to a certain level, whether that's because they met their goal. They said, hey, I just want to be a supervisor and I'm good in that space. Or I want to be a director of a service or whatever that high level role is for them. And they forget that to be a great leader means to be a great follower. Because in a leadership space, you're always learning. You're always outside of your comfort zone. You're always pushing yourself to do and be better. And in order to do that, you have to be in the room with people that are better at those things than you and smarter than you. And that's where the humility comes in, is recognizing that you don't always have the answers. And so I think the real true leaders, whether it's in public safety, EMS, emergency management, healthcare, hospitals, or finance, are people who know that there's stuff they don't know and are willing to learn.
I couldn't agree more with that statement. I have personally worked for a leader who was of that almost completely opposite mindset, that they reached a level in the organization and they felt that there was nothing more that anyone could teach them. And that they were the end all be all. And it created my organization a rather toxic environment that lasted for a couple of years and was a very difficult time here at my organization. Sure. When we talk about leadership and we talk about leaders, many articles have been written by many people, both in EMS and the fire service, where they talk about going to conferences, going to meetings. We had I had the privilege of meeting up with you in person last year at the Pinnacle EMS Leadership Conference in San Antonio. And you talked about LinkedIn and a couple of your posts, both leading up to and during the conference, you emphasized networking. And from the article we just read from at the beginning of the podcast, networking is important. For a leader to get out of their office, get out of their organization, attend a conference like Pinnacle or another one like Fire Rescue Med by the International Association of Fire Chiefs and interact with other leaders, what's the importance of building that network? What does that offer someone to bring back to their organization or offer them as far as self-improvement goes? Because you hit the nail on the head. If we're not improving, we're just stagnant.
That's it. There's so many benefits. I think the most obvious value to getting physically, literally out of your market is just learning what other people are doing, right? We talk a lot about best practices in this industry, but one of the big, I believe, failure points of the industry is our inability. You talked about insiders versus outside, right? We don't bring people in from the outside. When you look at the hospital space, one of the big hospital systems in Fort Worth, where when I was working for the 911 system in Fort Worth, obviously I had a lot of visibility into that world. They built a new hospital and you walked into that hospital. And I told the hospital administrator, I have never walked into a hospital and said, it smells so nice in here. I don't know if you have, but I walked into that lobby and went, what? Where am I? And it was so nice. I was greeted with a smile by the person at the front desk when I walked in the room and it smelled nice. And it truly felt like I was in a hotel. And this is a brand new hospital. So I think there's something to that too. We can all recognize that it was new. And so there's some benefit there. But I asked them, what am I smelling? Literally, it's the same scent that one of the hotel chains uses in their lobby. And they had someone come in from hospitality to consult with them to give them some best practices. And I thought that was just the coolest thing. They brought somebody in from the real outside to say, what works? Because again, going back to the goal, the goal is to create an experience for humans. Right. And I think, you know, different people have different things in their mind. You know, people that are in the clinical world every day might argue with me and say, that's not the end goal. It's to make sure they don't die. It's to make sure that they have a good clinical outcome. And I totally appreciate that. And I understand the value of that. However, That's not your only customer, is that patient. You've got other customers related to that patient. How do they experience our care? How do they experience you and how you show up and what we present? And so, you know, I think one of the values to getting out, really, obviously, very literally, you mentioned some of the big national conferences that are great. It's great to meet other people in our industry, but I even want to challenge people to go a step farther and say, connect with people that you don't know how they can help. You don't have any idea what they do or how they do it. Connect with them and ask those same questions. How do you solve operational issues related to performance measures? Right? How do you think about, because we all, you know, someone in operations has operations challenges. And whether that is applicable to clinical outcomes or logistics for a shipping company, there's still an operations person who shares that same skill set who's trying to solve a similar challenge. It just looks different. So I think there's huge value in getting out and connecting with people that are similar with you in the same industry, in the same role, in the same space, maybe in a different geography. But there's also value in connecting with people that are very different from you or in different spaces, and mostly for the benefit of learning, but also for teaching. So one of the things a lot of people kind of forget sometimes is, you know, well, let me say this. I tell my clients regularly, and if you look at my social platforms, you'll see it written, I'm sure, network when you need nothing. So what I mean by that, because you know this person, you know the person who only calls when they need something. And they go, hey, Mark, you know, hey, what's up, man? How are you? Blah, 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 and then they ask you for something. And they do it a couple times, and then what happens? You stop answering.
Right. Exactly. I was just about to say, you stop taking their calls, or you send them to voicemail because you know what they want.
Right. Because they're coming at you with an ask. And I talk about this a lot related to goal setting. We all have the same limited resources, energy, money, and time. Doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter which space you're in, which phase of your career, which industry. Humans have the same limited resources. I think there's a bigger argument here for why we fight and how we have struggles and a lot of the ego things related to those, but topic for another day. For now, getting aligned on, we have the same limited resources, energy, money, and time, EMT. And in every phase of our career, in every space of our life, we have a little bit more of one than the others. I had a call a couple weeks ago and a client said, but what if I don't have any of them? And I paused and I said, well, I would ask you if you're invested in the goal. Because if you don't have any time, money, or energy to give to the issue, you probably aren't aligned with your brand. It's probably not aligned with the person that you are, because when you care about something, you find the energy, you find the time, you find the resources. So a lot of times when you're talking about networking, and I say network when you need nothing, it means you may not know exactly what you're asking for, but you're networking with curiosity. So assume that either, and whether this is, you know, the person you spoke about before or my formal manager, not leader, who didn't really get it. And they think, well, I only have, and maybe some people listening, Mark, are like, man, I have a lot to share. And I haven't found a whole lot of people that can support me in my growth because I've done it all. I've been doing this for my challenge to you is to open your mind a little bit to how, maybe if we can get there, how you can support others. Even if you have nothing to learn from other people, then how can you use what you have, that knowledge, that experience, that wisdom, to support the industry in a different way? How can you become a mentor or a coach or a leader or a guide or someone that just creates food for thought for the industry to kind of drive things forward? So even if you have that mentality, is the message that nobody can help you, then how can you help them? And in that space, networking is going to look different, but still valuable.
That leads me into my next line of questioning, if you will.
Sure.
Another thing that has been identified, not only through the trends in the EMS trends, but also just in various discussions among EMS leaders and EMS agencies, is there's no path for advancement. And you touched on mentoring and coaching. Why is that important for leaders, for those that are in, that are their followers? Because eventually that leader is going to move on, whether it's through retirement or through another position in the same organization or another position in another organization. The position that they leave is going to need to be filled, and that's going to need to be filled by someone who at least has an idea of what's going on. So that's where mentoring and coaching, their ultimate replacement, comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
How does someone who's never done mentoring, never done coaching for someone that's a direct report to them or someone that they identify as a potential for their successor, how do they work with that individual and coach them and mentor them so that they're ready to at least do some of those responsibilities?
Oh man, such an important conversation. Mark, do you have someone that you would say has been a mentor to you over the years?
I do.
If you had to describe them to me, how would you describe what made that person a mentor?
They were experienced.
Okay.
They were knowledgeable, and they were willing to share their experience and willing to share their successes as well as some of their failures as well.
Yeah, transparency. That's great. Thanks for sharing. And did you ever ask them a question and they didn't have the answer?
Yes, but the answer was given to me in a relatively reasonable amount of time. Ultimately, the question was answered. If not right away, it was answered in a short period of time.
Right. So I think speaking to what a mentor is, and some of my mentors over the years are people that, yeah, they don't have the answer. They don't have to have all the answers. And you know, earlier I mentioned that you kind of oversimplify things sometimes. And mentorship is one of those, is that we think, okay, well, I mentor because I have the answers. And I'm going to teach someone because I have the answers. I have the knowledge, the wisdom, and I want to share. And the other angle of that same conversation is you don't have to have the answers. You have to have the resources to find the answers, right? And that with experience, ideally, comes a network and a handful of other people that are also resourced and experienced and have the answers. And so a lot of times mentorship, people put so much pressure on themselves to have it all right and have it all figured out. And I equate this to people using the word expert. I struggled with this. I know a lot of people in this industry really struggle with calling themselves an expert. I was a public information officer in a 911 system. I know you were a public information officer too, so I'm sure you can relate to this, Mark. But when you watch interviews of people in this industry, whether it's fire, EMS, or a nurse, and people love this healthcare heroes thing during the pandemic. And so many of my close friends and network were just, the phrase the kids would use was like, it was just such an ick. Like it gave them the ick. Like, I'm not a hero. That's so weird. What's the phrase that people say invariably when they get interviewed by the media about a call, something that went well, maybe they saved someone from a fire or they had a good outcome for cardiac arrest, or they happened to be on the plane when something went wrong and they were able to use their clinical skills. What's that phrase? I bet you can call it out. What's that phrase that they say that you hear over and over and over and over?
I was just doing my job.
That's it. I was just doing my job.
Yep.
I was just doing my job. Why? We downplay the value of what we do. We go, I was just doing my job. It's so uncomfortable, right? We don't want to be an expert. Why? Because then we're expected to have all the answers. And so people think about mentorship And they think about mentorship and they think, well, if I'm a mentor, it means I'm an expert. No, it means you're willing to share your experiences and that you've been through it or something similar to it. And you're willing to be vulnerable. I think mentorship is really, and being a coach and being a mentor are the same things. I share this with people out the gate in our first conversations regularly. I do both consulting and coaching. The biggest difference in the two, and where my heart is in coaching, is that in consulting, I'm expected to have the answers. I'm going to write the program for you. I'm going to adjust the things that are broken. I'm going to tell you, you know, what's working and what's not. And I'm going to come up with a program or a solution to solve that. As a consultant, I'm expected to be the expert. As a coach, it's not about having the answers. It's about asking the right questions and letting people come to the answers on their own. That's where real growth happens. There's no shortage of literature on how to be a leader. You know, if you think about this from a different perspective, health and wellness, there's no shortage of workout programs accessible for free on YouTube right now. You can go find a 90-day program. You can find a year program, and it's free and you could do it. Mm-hmm. But the information is not the piece that we're after anymore. We're in the age where you can find information on absolutely anything in 3 seconds. Statistically, and I would say sadly, but it's just what it is. Our attention spans now as people, Americans, shorter than goldfish attention span. 7 seconds. We have 7 seconds of an attention span. And so when you look at platforms online, you look at Reels or YouTube Shorts or stories, we get so much information all the time. And it's information overload. So the real skill anymore is not being able to get the information. It's being able to filter through it and being able to pull out what's important and what's noise. And that's the real skill. It's not, do I have the answers anymore? And I think that's a real generational mindset shift for a lot of people, is that the expectation of this up and coming generation, the Gen Zs, and even the millennials, the younger or even older millennials who are now in their early 40s, the expectation is not that you have the answer. It's that you have the experiences and you can share your experiences with me so that I can come to the right answer for me in this scenario, in this moment, in this time and day with my skills and what I'm working with. So I think that's a misconception that people have about what being a mentor really means is, I mean, short story long for sure, but it's not about having the answers. It's about having the willingness to be vulnerable and say, I don't have the answer, but let me help you figure out how we can get to it, or who does have the answer, and connecting people and utilizing that network, overlaying that with the wisdom from the experience and packaging up in a nice little book.
Excellent. That's awesome. Very good. So going back to your coaching business, and I believe it was it 21 that you went full time? Yes.
It was. Mm-hmm.
So what happened in those, I guess, 7 years from 14 to 21 to convince you, hey, there's a need or a demand, and I can do this. What?
Oh my gosh!
Was it one thing? Was it a culmination of things?
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you guys just hear the audio. I'm grinning ear to ear because it's such an evolution, and like anything, it's a journey. I really learned to appreciate the journey, and that's been a practice. I have not always been that way. I myself am a very outcome focused person. I have been in sales since I was 15. I love the success, right? Who doesn't? Who doesn't love to feel like they did good things or are doing good things? But I've really learned to appreciate the journey. So I'm going to share a little bit about my journey. I started doing, again, coaching in, you know, the physical space, physical wellness, in 2014. I took that on. I was doing it kind of, you know, supplemental. I was traveling a lot for work. I was in a national business development role and was on the road every other week, if not more often, for 2, 3, 4, 5 days at a time. And I was never home. I was doing these workout programs in my hotel. And I was just, it was, again, means to an end for balance for me. It was my mental and emotional release that was not work when I was traveling and working 12-hour days and, you know, just putting in emotional and time and all the things. So it was my physical release. But this industry is funny. And I credit so many things that I've learned and become to our industry, right? But I will say, and I've said it across a couple platforms, I am not sitting here claiming to be EMS, right? I do say us, I say we, because y'all are my people, y'all are my space. And actually, about 78% of my client base so far has been in EMS, because that's where my network is. And a lot of my business comes from directly from referrals, people that I've worked with who had a good experience and share that experience, and it results in more people coming to me and saying, hey, I've got this need, and going right that. But the transition for me has been slow but sure, in that I got into the space, I realized I love the coaching aspect, I love the team building. That's what I learned from that multi-level marketing company, was I like the team building. I'm pretty dang good at it. I'm pretty dang good at sharing my mission and sharing my vision and getting people behind it. And it's not because I'm selling to them. This is an important differentiation, but because I'm sharing. I pride myself on that. And that's a sales practice that is really important for people to think of when they think of, why are you telling your story? Why are you sharing? Going back to humility and people being uncomfortable with talking about themselves and, you know, I'm just doing my job. Here's what's missing from that. There's a big piece of your story that's not being told. And when you only share the successes and the outcomes, there's a lot of people that can't relate to that because they haven't done it. But when you share the process of learning and growing, people can relate to that. So I may not have ever been a fire chief in a big system, but I've been in a high pressure leadership role. And I may never have had to, deliver news of a family member's death, but I've had to have some really tough conversations. And so I may not have lived your exact experience. And the other guy who's only been here for 1 year instead of 2 years and 3 summers may not have lived your exact experience, but they've lived the foundation of that experience. They've lived the feeling. They understand the struggle. It may not look the same, but they can relate. And so going back to my story, I completely brand transitioned from Shine Together to Brett Lyle Coaching because I invested myself in a marketing expert. And I still have access to it and listen to the trainings regularly, called Marketing Impact Academy. And I am taught, how do you build a business online? You know, how do you connect with people? How do you do these things in a very real way, not just conceptual, but how do you implement this practice into your real life to do the things? And so as I was on my journey, I didn't always know that I was on this journey, right? This is a lot retrospective. And a lot of introspection while I was in it. What am I doing? Why am I doing it? But I didn't fully get it yet. And that's okay. Looking back, that's okay. And the value of those experiences have changed over the years. So what I mean by that, when I say when I left the industry in 2018, I had advanced my career to national business development director and was floating all over the country. Like I shared, traveling a lot. I was working with different operations, our sister companies on the air side. I was on the ground side, doing kind of strategic development and market growth. And I loved what I did, but I never felt like I was really successful because I was always chasing my tail, you know, where, and people get wrapped up in that. I think leadership, It's one of the biggest lessons that we have to learn is how do you build those boundaries so that you actually can be and feel successful? Because we can't save every little piece because it never stops. The sky is always falling in our world, right? Always. And whether you're a public information officer or you're a frontline field employee, or you're literally putting out fires or figuratively, we're always putting out fires. And real leadership, effective leadership, gets discovered when you can get out of putting out the fires into how do you prevent the fires, right? When you can share that vision, that mission. So getting to share that vision, that mission, and getting people to support you in that journey, really comes down to knowing where you're going. And a lot of times, and I start with all my clients with branding, is where are you going as an agency, but also where are you going as a leader? What's important to you? Why are you doing what you're doing? And a lot of times, why you get into it, for me, it was because I had bills to pay, is going to be a whole lot different than why you stay in it. I don't think enough people do stay interviews, but they're such a valuable tool. Why are you still here? So I talk a lot about this in kind of the life coaching side of what I do, which is, what are you saying yes to? There could be 1,000 reasons why you should not do something. People say, oh, why not? But there's 1,000 reasons why not. But if there's one good enough why yes, you're going to do it. It may be risky. It may be chaotic. It may be taking from this versus this versus this. But if there's one good enough reason, one compelling reason, you're going to say yes. So it's really important for us as leaders to learn, what do we say yes to? Why are we saying yes to things that we do? So going back to my story, when I was in this industry, I'd been in this industry for about 8 years at that point, and I had a non-compete. It was 2 years, got it negotiated down to one, left the industry, couldn't work in, 40 something states in this country, doing the only thing I'd done since I graduated college, business development in this space. I was 30. I had managed a team remotely. I've always been one of the only non-clinicians in the room, if not the only. I've always been one of the only women in the room, if not the only. And I'm typically the youngest, not anymore, but I used to typically be the youngest. And all of those biases kind of worked, against me in a lot of ways. I think also worked for me in a lot of ways. And I'm very aware of that, right? Being a woman is one of my biggest superpowers. And when I left the industry in 18, and I'm like, man, I've worked for 3 major companies and I've done a lot of stuff. I've worked in Texas. I've worked in Florida. I did some work in the Carolinas. I did some work in California and Oklahoma and, all over the, Alabama and Tennessee. And I've done all the things. And the common denominator, how I kind of opened up this discussion, was people. It didn't matter where I went or what I was doing or in which capacity, people were always the same. And so I left the industry and had non-compete, didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And one of my former employees, who frankly, I had talked off a cliff from leaving multiple times, called me and said, well, you're leaving, so am I. And I said, yeah, I knew that. And asked me if I could help with their resume. And I of course said yes. And another former coworker came to me and said, hey, because I'd done a lot of technical writing, I'd put together a lot of proposals and I'd done the public speaking part of the presentation of the bid process. And I'd done a lot of that. And obviously I'd been a social media manager and a public information officer and all the external facing things. And so when they came to me and said, hey, can you help me with my technical document? I've been doing that since high school. Yes, I can help you with that. So was born Brett Lyle Coaching. So 2018 was the first time I was paid to do a thing related to career coaching. But it really was founded in my passion for supporting people, because I frankly had dedicated a lot of time and energy and financial investment into this career that now I wasn't allowed to work in. And now what, right? I was petrified. I was full income. I didn't have a backup plan. I don't have, a safety net. I mean, I had a little bit of a safety net. Thank goodness for Financial Peace University. Thank you, Dave Ramsey. But I didn't know where to go. And so what I do today is really about helping people bulletproof their careers and protect themselves, because I want to believe that everyone in the world looks out for one another and takes care of one another and does all those things. But the real truth, Mark, was I, twice by 34, had well-paying jobs in roles that I was doing really well in, loved what I did, and lost my job overnight and had to figure it out. And that's life. And I don't want people to feel that level of fear and discomfort that I felt, not knowing where to turn and not knowing where to do. So to kind of circle back to, you know, why do I do what I do, and how do you get to transitioning to full time, is that by the time it happened twice, I went, okay, I'm an Aggie. We say twice is tradition for us. If it happens once, it's happenstance. Twice it's tradition. Okay. So I'm going, there's a tradition here. And I was building other people's businesses. I was pouring into other people. And I realized that full circle moment was, I can do this for myself. I should do this for myself. Because when I'm in my good space and I feel like I can be fully Brett, the hashtags that I use to kind of follow my content, I use hashtag forever_professional for all the professional content. I use forever_you for more of the life coaching stuff. And forever Brett, you'll hear about my story. And that's my goal, is how do I get in front of people that know that there's something to learn, they're coachable, that are in a position where they have time, money, or energy, or all three or two of those, and are willing to make that investment in themselves, recognizing that investing in yourself makes you a better leader for those around you. So I made that decision a couple of years ago, as you said. So it was summer of 2021. And I'm like, man, this is a tough position. Now what? Now what, round two? But I had a plan already. Like, I know what to do now. This is easy peasy. And I told myself, as long as I can make X a month, I'm not looking back. I'm going to invest in myself and I'm going to do that. And so that's what I've done.
Keeping in the theme with Brett Lyle coaching, earlier this year, if I remember correctly, you had a table at a state EMS conference for the first time. Is that right?
Yes. So, yes.
And how was that experience? What did you find, and what did you learn from being at a table for multiple hours and seeing people come and go all throughout the day?
Oh, I've done it 1,000 times, but never for my own brand. So talk about stepping out of your comfort zone. You know, I'm like, man, I was fortunate. I was at an Arrowhead EMS conference in Duluth, Minnesota. Beautiful place, wonderful people. It's an amazing conference if you haven't been. And I was speaking. I had a couple sessions. Of course, first thing in the morning on Sunday morning. So I bribed them with a local coffee. It's called Heroes. Oh gosh, I wanted to say something. It's like, I think it's Heroes Rising. I might have to send it to you. But amazing people. I had to bribe people with coffee, basically, to show up early. I'm like, please, I don't want to be, you know, but ultimately I had just totally embraced that. You know what, if it's me and two people, it will basically be a group coaching session. It'll be so fun. But I went for speaking, and yeah, I had a table as well. And it was so cool and strange and just outside of this world. The first time I had my name on a sign was at Wisconsin EMS. In the article I wrote on networking that you'd shared with in the opening was in 2021. And so 2021, I went from working for someone else, the first 6 months of the year, working for someone else. And Mark, I've probably been to, gosh, I mean, every conference, you know, the local ones, the regional ones. That's been my space, right? I've always been public facing. I'm always the business development person. So they're like, okay, you go stand behind the camera. You go talk to the people. Brett, you like talking? Tag, you're it. So I've done that as long as I can remember. I mean, even back so far as when I was 15 working at that women's gym, or when I was working at Gold's Gym in college, or marketing, I was working for a marketing company that worked with the auto industry. I've always been in the external facing roles, but it's another game when you're talking about yourself. So I appreciate the level of discomfort that comes with that, because I'm doing it at a national level with my name on a brand, on a table, standing behind it going, man, I sure hope I am what they expect. Man, I sure hope that when they come to me, they're not disappointed. Or that if they have a question, that I have the answers. And the truth is, like I said, there's a beautiful level of vulnerability in that, is that I don't always have the answers. So being able to be forward with that and be open with that. But it's so fun. I enjoyed it so much. It's a different space of the same, in the same game, right? It's a different chapter in the same book. It's still networking and meeting people and building relationships and developing, you know, trust quickly, so that people share something with me that I can do something with. So my goal is always to add value. That's, if we go back to, what do I say yes to, and why did I say yes to being on this podcast, or why do I say yes to coaching clients or developing programs for another company? Why would I do that? The answer is always because a lot of the same reason, and a lot of people may be surprised, but the answer is not different than yours as a clinician. It's to make a difference, right? I want to help people. I want to help people help themselves. Right. I want to show up. And so it's just another form of showing up for people. And a lot of people are a lot more comfortable in a one-on-one setting in person than they are in a group, in a session or a classroom or online, because a lot of people, if they're like, oh, they're gonna think I'm weird. If you try to connect with me and if I don't know you and we try to connect, you're gonna think I'm a weirdo or a stalker or whatever the thing is that people have anxiety about. Social anxiety exists online too, just as much as it does in person. I think it was such a cool space to be able to lean into what I do. And frankly, I was taking notes going, what do I do? How do I, you know, when there were those awkward exchanges, because guaranteed there are, how did I overcome those?
Yeah.
So it was really valuable for me. And I hope in turn for those who follow me on social as I'm sharing stories, and those who learn from, you know, my experiences in working with me as a coach, is that I too walk the walk, and I have to, because I'm teaching it. I'm telling you, you got it, and you have to do it. So I have to do it. So it's a fun space to be in. I'm always learning and growing, and really look forward to not just conferences, but just working with people and learning what they can teach me. Ultimately, how can I be a better coach? How can I be a better mentor? How can I be better for them? And so that's a space I stay true in, is from a place of curiosity, is how can I support? Maybe you can support me, but also how can I support you? Because ultimately that's what we're all trying to do, right?
Exactly. Well, Brett, thank you so much for your time and talking to us about mentoring, coaching, about your experiences as well. For those who are listening, who may be interested in learning more, talk to us about where we can find you. You mentioned LinkedIn. Talk about your website, social media, anything you want to throw out there, in case people want to contact you for help or services.
Absolutely. And thanks for the opportunity. So everywhere, I try to be consistent everywhere. It's going to be Brett Lyle Coaching, BrettLyleCoaching. So you can find me on YouTube and Facebook. I've got a personal and professional page on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram, all under those same handles. My website is www.brettlylecoaching.com. If you're interested in just tagging in and being a part of the conversation or being in the know when I have new programs or offerings or public webinars or things of that nature, just go to that contact button. It'll ask you 4 questions: name, email, phone number, and how can I help? And so interested in a free consultation, happy to discuss. But ultimately, like I said, I'm here, and to be very clear, I'm always happy to connect with people who are interested in the same things I am. So if any of this has resonated with you, please feel free to reach out. No pressure for any kind of services or sales. I just like to grow my network that way authentically. So thank you guys for sticking around, and thank you so much, Mark, for having me.
No, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for taking some time to talk with us. Before I let you go, One final question. What is the last book that you read?
Ooh, this one's tricky. I'm actually in Anthony Bourdain. So talking about being a workaholic, we talked about this before. I am not always good at just reading to read, but I love to read. It's a hobby of mine. So I got some great advice a while ago about, you know, trying to monetize your passion, trying to monetize your hobby, and how sometimes it can turn into you kind of losing sight of your hobby. So I most recently have picked up, you know, what I would call like a beach read or something lighthearted. So I'm currently reading Anthony Bourdain's book, and I think it's something like a Bloody Valentine to food lovers and something like that. I'm about halfway through that. So non-leadership, not self-help, not supportive at all. I'm in that right now. I'm super proud to be.
Nothing wrong with that. I usually have at least one leadership read and then one, like you said, one non-leadership read going. Yes. So that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I will share with you a couple of books have been pretty impactful for me for my career, though, that I have read in the past, if I may.
Absolutely. So please do.
If people aren't familiar, Brené Brown, she is a very much speaks to statistics and psychology and the deep human needs of the foundations of leadership. She has a really great book called Dare to Lead. And it's about some of these heavier topics we talked about, vulnerability, why leading is important, and how to really do it from a place where you can truly make an impact. The other is called The Charge. It's a book that really talks about why you do what you do. It's Brendan Burchard, The Charge. It's a really great book. So those would be a few that I really enjoy. Of course, you know, Patrick Lencioni's amazing, and John Maxwell, and we've all read. I love Simon Sinek. So he really talks too about why do you do what you do, and leading from why, not just what. But those are three authors that I really enjoy: Brendan Burchard, Brené Brown, and Simon Sinek.
Outstanding. Thank you, Brett. Before we go, I want to leave you, Brett left you her social media. Let me leave you ours. We're on Instagram @not_a_fib_podcast. Once again, that's not a fib podcast underscore between each word. Email @not.a.fib_podcast@gmail.com. Brett, thank you so much again for your time. Any closing thoughts before we let you go?
I love the name of your podcast. So I think from a branding perspective, I saw it the first time you came out with it and went, I'm so glad Mark's doing a podcast, A, and B, catchy. I love it. So you're killing it, doing a great job. And I always want to leave on a positive note. You know, one of the things, I know I've shared a lot of struggles in this call, and it's just discussion. I've shared a lot of things that we don't do well as an industry, but I want to leave on a positive note, because I know that a lot of people out there are doing incredible things, and the power of networking is really, as I talked about in my article, is really about doing exactly what we're all trying to do: save lives, change lives, and support lives. So I just want to say thank you to everybody listening for the work that you do every day, and for showing up and investing in yourself by something as simple as listening to this podcast. So thank you, Mark, for leading the charge, and thank you guys for being here and for listening.
Thank you, Brett. And thank you all for joining us. We will look forward to talking again next month. So have a good day.
Bye.